This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
If Florida State,
we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today on the podcast, Wayne and I are going to talk through our fearless predictions for the season, ranging from Winston statistics all the way to our expectations for the offense, defense, and the Seminole squad as a whole. This will be a little bit longer podcast than the rest of the season, so let's get right to it. Back with me is Wayne McGahey, yet again, from NoleDigest.com. Today we are going to be talking about our fearless predictions for the 2014 season, and I have to admit right off the bat that I'm going to be going a little bit seat of the pants here, given what we've been putting out of late over at Noel Digest. I haven't been able to total everything up, so I'm ballparking as best I can off of other things that I've put together. But this should be pretty fun. So Wayne, let's get started. Let's start with our predictions for Jameis Winston's production. So, the real question here, the interesting question is, you know, obviously people talk about a sophomore slump, but it's going to be tough for him to have a sophomore slump surrounded by what he has. Question is, you know, are we going to expect him to have ultimately a better stat line or, you know, basically hold true, or what can we expect from Winston here? So let's talk about our projections for Winston's production on the year.
All right, well, as far as mine goes, in my fearless predictions, I said that Winston would have worse numbers this season. And I meant that in a per-game situation, because I expect Florida State to be playing an extra game from last season. So I expect Winston to have around 280 completions with a completion percentage of around 65-66%. For 4,100 yards and 42 touchdowns.
Yeah, so on the whole, those are pretty comparable, actually, from last year. So when you're saying worse per game numbers, so how many interceptions are you projecting? So you've got him at what in terms of run that back by me again in terms of completion percentage?
About 65-66%, with probably 12 interceptions.
Okay, so you expect his overall efficiency rating to go down a little bit, because those interceptions will drive the rating down. And also last year, I think he was around 60, just under 67%. So you expect an overall drop in completion percentage and a couple more interceptions. He had 10 or he had 10 interceptions last year, 40 touchdowns, 10 interceptions last year. You're expecting 42 touchdowns and 14 interceptions. You said 12 or 14?
12.
12 interceptions over last year. So you're expecting just a little bit lower passer rating than what he put up in 2013 then?
Yes. He finished last season with just under 4,100 yards. I'm predicting 4,100 yards for this season, so his passing yards is also going to go down because they're going to be playing an extra game.
Right.
So, all in all, I think that they're comparable to last season, but since they play an extra game, they're going to be a little less than what you saw per game last season.
Yeah, and what's interesting is I think his yardage numbers may be down just slightly because I'm not sure he's going to play quite as much this year and overall in terms of, you know, the raw numbers per, you know, per game on a per game basis there. But I do think he's going to be a little more efficient this year than last year. I mean, I look at the tape from last year, and I think he had so many areas that he could improve, which is really frightening. I mean, you look at his footwork. His footwork was abysmal at times last year, and you know there were throws that he made that were all arm, that were, you know, the sorts of throws that only a guy that's as gifted as he could make. So I'm looking at that and thinking, you know, if he's improved at all in those areas, I'm expecting maybe a little bit more, a little bit better rating overall, because the other thing is that I think this is going to be a little bit bigger play offense than last year. There's going to be a little bit less of the ability to kind of force the ball downfield and just, you know, let Kelvin Benjamin go up and get it, for example. And a little bit more of a run after the catch, you know, guys running away from people downfield kind of offense, or just checkdowns to backs. And that, to me, is I think we're going to see a little bit different. Right? So our predictions differ right from the start. I think we're going to see something closer to 68%, you know, maybe a little over 68% of a completion percentage, maybe around the same yardage overall, but, you know, with one more game played, but more yards per attempt than his 10.6 from last year, which was already absurd. And I think he'll throw fewer interceptions this year than he did last year as a result of maturing a little bit and checking the ball down a little bit. Now, he did get some good breaks on some things being tipped and not picked off and things last year, so it's possible that, you know, a couple could bounce the other way this year, but I think he's actually going to be a little bit sharper on that than last year. Now, of course, then that leads us to our next question, which is the real wild card here, and I suspect the reason you're expecting his numbers to drop a little bit has to do with the wide receiver situation. Let's get into talking a little bit about that. What we'll do here is we'll talk about the people we expect to finish as the top four pass catchers on the team, and more or less what we would expect their numbers to look like. Now, go ahead and, you know, fill us in terms of why you think the current receiving situation may drive his numbers down, because I think you agree that he has improved over last year. But it's just a question of receivers for you, I think, that, based on your projection that he's going to go down just a little bit.
It is. You know, you had a guy like Kenny Shaw last year that you're really going to miss this year, the guy who's always lining up in the right spot. Yeah, you have more talent with Rudolph and Lane coming in, but they're also freshmen. And both of them were not, neither of them were early enrollees, so they got here in the fall. So they've only had that limited amount of time to learn the playbook, whereas Kenny Shaw, you know, and Benjamin had multiple years in the program to learn Jimbo's offense. So I think that the consistency at wide receiver is going to be what trips him up a little bit.
Yeah, I think that may be true a little bit early in the year in terms of some learning process, a little bit of a learning curve to get comfortable with everybody there. But I do think that, you know, this is where, again, I actually am looking at this, and I think that the talent differential at that position is so significant. I mean, Kenny Shaw was a good player. He made some tremendous catches, you know, particularly taking some shots, and was willing to sacrifice his body over the middle. He was terrific between the numbers. But by and large, when I look at, you know, who they're replacing him with, you know, the primary guy right now, because of Bobo Wilson's suspension, is Kermit Whitfield, who, you know, just on bubble screens could put up, you know, a third of Kenny Shaw's receiving yardage from last year because of the numbers that, you know, that he's going to be able to put up after the catch. I mean, that kind of weapon, I think, actually bumps the numbers overall. And I think in terms of consistency, I think you're going to by and large see that. I don't know that there's going to be much of a drop there. I think Wilson is a much better player overall, talent-wise, than Shaw was. I think, you know, again, Kermit is a guy who, you know, he's not a natural receiver at this point, but he's going to offer so much down the field and so much, you know, in the yards after catch situation that I'm expecting that Kenny Shaw position to basically be a wash. You know, they'll get it from more than one guy, but I think it's going to basically be a wash at that slot position. I don't see that being really a drop off at all. Now, I do think there's going to be a drop off from Kelvin Benjamin. I don't think there's any way around that. I mean, you lose a first round pick who's 6'5" and can run the whole NFL route tree. You know, those guys are not common. And I don't think that they're going to be able to just plug, you know, Christian Green or anybody else in and get the same kind of production that they got from Kelvin Benjamin, 15 touchdowns, over 1,000 yards last year. I think that that position may drop off a little bit, but you know, that's where I'm maybe a little more bullish on the young talent they've got at the wide receiver position, and maybe not quite as big of a fan as many people, many in the Seminole world are. Of what Kenny Shaw brought to the table. I mean, I think he, like I said, I don't want to take anything away from him. I think he was terrific, but I do think the guys that are stepping in, there's very little reason to expect any drop off there. But I know you disagree. So let's talk about what we expect from the top four pass catchers on the team. And to put this in perspective, last year there were a clear top four pass catchers on the team. You had Rashad Green with 76 receptions for 1,128 yards, averaged just under 15 yards a catch, 9 touchdowns. So 76 catches, 9 touchdowns, 1,100 yards, good season, very good season. Anything close to that this year, and he's the all-time leading receiver at Florida State. Kelvin Benjamin last year, 54 catches for just over 1,000 yards, 18 yards a catch and 15 touchdowns. Clearly, you know, the downfield threat last year, you know, you look at those 15 touchdowns, 18.72 yard per catch average. Then you got Kenny Shaw with the same number of catches as Kelvin Benjamin, 54, 933 yards, averaging 17 a catch, 6 touchdowns. Then you have a pretty big drop to Nick O'Leary with 33 catches for 557, averaging just under 17 with 7 scores. And then from there, you get into the backs. Devontae Freeman, 22 catches. Christian Green, 13 catches. Then Kermit Whitfield with 5, etc. So you get down into that range. It was a pretty clear 1-2-3-4 last year. So let's talk about what to expect this year on the Florida State passing attack.
Obviously, you have to start with Rashad. I mean, he's this year the way where I have him projected, he's gonna own every receiving record in Florida State history. I've got him at 80 catches for 1,200 yards and 10 touchdowns. So he's gonna own it all, and he deserves it. He's, you know, in his freshman year, Florida State doesn't beat Notre Dame without him to you know, preserve Jimbo's first season. Last year, you know, Florida State doesn't get to the national championship game without him.
And they they don't win the national championship game without him either. I mean, that last drive was you know, Benjamin may have caught the touchdown, but it was set up by Green's catch and run, and the horse collar tackle that, you know, obviously
should have been called,
that you know was called as it should have been and put Florida State right, you know, inside the five. Oh wait, no, it wasn't called. So yeah, but you know, they probably don't win the national championship game without Rashad Green last year. So I mean, that's...
No, you're thinking of the pass interference call on Chris Davis in the end zone that put him back on the two.
Oh right. Yeah. Oh wait, no, that wasn't called either. Okay, go ahead. Well, there was one called on him, and that was actually right. Now he interfered with Benjamin on the last catch as well. Which was not.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's a huge size difference. I mean, the kid's only 5'9". What you gonna do? But next on the list, I actually have Travis Rudolph. I think the freshman comes up big this season. I think he ends up with 45 catches for 675 yards and 6 touchdowns. After that,
bold.
I have
bold. That's bold. Putting the freshman there, very bold in the Fisher offense.
I have Nick O'Leary. I'm sorry, Nick O'Leary. I have second on the list. He has 50 for 807. Uh-huh. I think that Jameis is gonna. You know, I mean, you put a linebacker on him, you can't stop him. You know, it's just. I think that you know, it's his senior season. I think Jameis is gonna trust him earlier in the season than the younger guys. I think Rudolph comes on late, you know, comes on as one of the main targets late. But early, I think it's going to be the Rashad Green and Nick O'Leary show. And then finally, I have another freshman who I think ends up with 35
catches. So that's Green, then O'Leary, then
Yeah, it's
okay.
Green, O'Leary, Rudolph, and then Lane.
Uh huh.
35 catches for 630 yards and 8 touchdowns for Lane. He's more of a big play guy than Rudolph is, so you know he. While he has slightly less yards, he has 10 less catches, but he has 2 more touchdowns. I have both Christian Green and Jesus Wilson at 35 catches apiece, but they're lower on the total yardage list. But yeah, those are my 4. Green, O'Leary, Rudolph, Lane. Too fresh.
And so you've got those guys, and what's interesting is it appears that you're expecting the freshmen to really step in and get the bulk of the work in terms of targets and such, because when you're looking at 50, how many catches again did you have for Rudolph?
45.
And that's only, obviously with one more game, but that's only 9 catches behind Shaw from last year, Shaw and Benjamin. So, I mean, that's putting him on the field an awful lot. So you're really expecting those freshmen to really step in and take the bulk of the work.
I do. I think last year's wide receiver class, I mean, I think Harrison plays a ton, but I think last year's wide receiver class is – it may have been one of the best, you know, ever at Florida State. But I really do. I think it's not a question of talent, because Ermin Lane and Travis Rudolph are more talented than the guys in front of them right now. I don't think that's a question at all. What I do think is the question is how quickly they can learn not to make mistakes, because that's what – that's how you're going to get playing time in Jimbo's offense. It's not about making the big play. It's about not making a mistake right now.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's why I actually think it's going to be a little bit before we see the freshmen come into that level to that degree. I'm expecting to see a little bit more of a weight in terms of seeing those guys. I don't think their numbers are going to peak quite so much, but yeah, I've got a different list, which just shows how deep Florida State is there, and a little bit of how much uncertainty there really is in terms of who's going to be where in the Florida State offense right now in the passing game.
Absolutely, because if we knew what we had there, I wouldn't be predicting 2 freshmen to come in and have 1,200 yards combined.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that ultimately things are going to get spread around a little bit more, so that everybody's numbers are going to be down just a little bit individually as a receiving core. And that includes Rashad Green. I think his numbers are going to drop in terms of overall numbers. I think his average per catch is actually going to go up a little bit. I think he'll be just over 15 this year. But I've actually got the next guy. So I've got Green with about 70 catches, which, you know, is a little bit, you know, he was getting 5.4 per game last year. That 70 puts him at just around 5 per game, so a little bit less per game. And then about 1,100 yards, about the same amount, so a little higher yard per catch average, with about 8 touchdowns. So roughly similar production from him. Maybe, you know, I could see him, you know, maybe my touchdown projection being just a little low for him.
Well, give me just a second here, because if he has 8, and I'm correct, let me pull the numbers up, 8 puts him tied for the Florida State record. 9 gives it to him outright.
Well, then I'm going to go ahead and say 9, because I have a suspicion that if he has 8, they're going to do what they can to make sure, if he gets anywhere close, they're going to do what they can to feed him 1 or 2 more.
Yep.
So I'm going to say 70 for 1,100 with 9. And then I'm going to go Jesus Wilson, or Jesus Wilson, Bobo Wilson, as the next yardage guy out of this group. And that's factoring in what, you know, we're expecting a 2-game suspension to open the year. I think he's that good. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to get a lot of action early on. And I think he's going to, I think he's going to be a mismatch. You know, they're going to line him up at a couple different spots, and he's going to be a guy that, that Winston really trusts. I'm expecting him to be about 40 catches, 740, 750, in terms of yardage, and about six touchdowns as well. And then I've got O'Leary actually with a bump in catches. I do think he's going to, He's gonna have more than last year. Last year he averaged about 2.4 catches per game. This year I think he's gonna be just around, maybe just a hair over that. I've also got him with 40 catches for about 600 yards and 10 touchdowns. So his touchdown numbers going up a little bit. His yardage numbers being about the same per catch and a few extra catches on the year. So about the same number of catches as Wilson. And then the number four guy, I actually have the, I have Pops. I've got the old man of the group, Christian Green, as with 30 catches for 500 yards and six touchdowns as actually the next guy on that list. So that's actually lower overall numbers than what we saw from number four, Nick O'Leary last year. Without a doubt. I mean, in terms of the number four guy, I think that's, you know, I think we're going to see, you know, you look at 40 catches versus 54 for number two, 40 catches versus 54 for number three, and then 30 versus 33 for number four. And that's with one more game. That sort of tells you what I'm expecting in that I think we're going to see things get stretched out pretty well so that, you know, I could throw Kermit Whitfield up there. I think he's going to have close to 30 catches. And actually, if we want to do this by yardage, I think Kermit Whitfield's going to do more with his 30 catches than Christian Green will. I mean, I think Kermit Whitfield, let's say he has 30 catches. I think he's going to end up somewhere around 600 yards instead of 500, maybe even a little more than that, averaging 20 plus per touch. You know, that's depending on how we're doing this. I mean, I'm going by sort of expectation in terms of catches. But if we're doing it by yardage, I think Whitfield is my number four. And it's not until number six or so that you get to the freshman for me. But I'm expecting them to be in the high 20s. I'm expecting both Lane and Rudolph to be in the high 20s in terms of receptions. So that, you know, you're looking at a little bit more balance all the way down. A little bit more, actually, if you go back, a little bit more like 2011 was in terms of how the reception spread was. Now, the difference is that Rashad Green was only a freshman at that point. He only played nine games. He still led the team in receptions. Would have been higher had he played the whole year. And, you know, obviously he's the bell cow at this point. But that year you had 38 catches from Green, 36 from Rodney Smith, 26 from Christian Green, remember him, 34 from Kenny Shaw, 29 from Burt Reed, that's fifth on the team, 12 from Greg Dent, and 12 from Nick O'Leary, who was a freshman that year. So down, you know, we're getting all the way down to number seven, we get O'Leary with 12, and I think, you know, that's basically what we're going to see this year, is getting down into seven or eight, where you're getting into the 20s, actually. So I think the production's going to be there, it's just going to be spread over more players.
Yeah, I think it's going to be spread over more players. I have Christian Green and Bobo Wilson both with 35 catches. I just have them lower on the yardage list than I do the freshmen.
Yeah,
I just there's going to be a lot of completions.
Yeah, like, yeah, no doubt.
Jameis is great at getting the ball where it needs to go. It's just depending on them to catch it, but I think that I think there's going to be a very, very high number of completions, and with like some of the other guys not getting like you also have to throw in the backs in there who will get a ton of catches too. Carlos, Pender, and Cook can all receive out of the backfield, so it's going to be interesting.
There's only so many plays to go around, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, that's. You know, that's where you gotta go with it.
I mean, like last year, they Florida State repped the jet sweep to Levante Whitfield, to Kermit Whitfield, all year, especially as the year wore on from the halfway point of the year on, as he continued to get healthier in terms of that hamstring, they were repping that jet sweep quite a bit, and I don't remember them running it once, but if you think about it, when did they need to?
Yeah, you know.
I mean, how many? Why? What need was there to run it when you know when you can just run Houston and get 15 a play? So, you know, that's where, you know, Fisher tends to go back to the well if it keeps working. It's one thing that's often misunderstood about the way his offense works, but he'll call the same play over and over and over again if it keeps working. I mean, you know, back in 2012, a second half against Clemson, they called Houston 8 times and went 8 for 8 for, I think, 2 touchdowns. Now, it went to a different guy, I think, 5 of those 8 times. So it looked like a different play, but it was the same play. So, you know, that's the other thing, other factor here is that, you know, if they find a hot streak somewhere, then that takes out some of the variation there potentially. The other thing that's interesting there in terms of the way that Fisher will operate is, and this may actually lean toward your guess a little bit more than mine here is that, you know, you got to also factor in the garbage time for some of these stats. And honestly, the freshmen are going to get more of a look come garbage time, without a doubt. So, you know, we got to expect that, you know, early on in the season, especially Lane and Rudolph are still going to be on the field when the twos are on the field, but it's unlikely that we'll see, say, Christian Green or Bobo or Kermit Whitfield or those guys getting those reps with the twos with Sean McGuire and that, those sort of things. So you may actually be that may lean toward you a little bit that those freshmen are actually going to get some additional reps as the season goes along with the twos, which is going to boost their numbers. So that may, you know, I may end up being further away here than you and all that's factored in. But, you know, this is why it's fun. It's we don't know exactly how that's all going to shake out.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting that on the on a defending national championship team and, you know, the preseason number one team in the country, we can still have these discussions.
Right, exactly. And so let's go ahead and move forward to something that I think we can project with a little bit more confidence, and that is the running back situation. So where do you put the top runners on the team, and so what do you expect from the top rushers on the Florida State roster?
I've got Carlos at right at 200 carries for around 1,300 yards and 14 touchdowns, which equals out to about 6.5 yards per carry, which is just ridiculous in its own right. That would put him. Yeah, I know you're going higher. I know you're going higher.
We talk about ridiculous. Wait until you hear what I've got for Carlos.
Yeah, but 1,300 yards would make him the record holder for single season yardage by a Florida State running back, breaking Warwick Dunn record from 1996.
Keep in mind, though, there's 15 games now. Warwick Dunn did his in, I think, 12.
That's correct. You know, not to sidetrack, but if you ask Danny Cannell, who holds the season, you know, the single season for yardage record, he'll say him because Jameis had another two games.
He's got him per game. Danny's right. He does. You know, if we want to do this per game, then you know, it's only fair.
Yeah. Next, I have Mario Pender. I've got him at 150 for 908 touchdowns, which is about 6 yards a carry. And then I've got Dalvin Cook at 100 carries with 600 yards, 6 touchdowns.
Yeah, so we're not very far off. I think in terms of the carry division, I'm really close. I've got also Carlos Williams with 200 carries roughly. But I've got him at 1,500 yards. I think he's going to average 7.5 plus, which, you know, is filthy.
Heisman numbers.
Yeah, actually it is. But, you know, I think this is one of the reasons, I've said all off season, that one of the reasons that Jameis Winston is not going to win the Heisman happens to be sharing the backfield with him. And I think that's going to be a factor because people are going to look at the Florida State offense and say, well, you know, which one would we vote for? You know, obviously Winston is the guy there, but at the same point, I think Carlos is going to be one of those eye-opening backs where, you know, he's going to be mentioned in the same breath as Todd Gurley all by the midpoint of the year. And that, you know, that's saying a lot because I love Gurley. So, you know, but I think he's going to average around 7.5 per carry, getting just under 200 carries. So right around, I think he'll go over 1,400 yards. I expect him to be around 1,500 yards with about 12 to 14 touchdowns on the year. So basically obliterating the numbers from the backs last year. I actually, 14 touchdowns, I mean, that was Devontae Freeman last year. I actually think, given the way that Florida State shapes up in the red zone this year, I'm going to give him 19 touchdowns on the year. So I'm going to go with 200 carries for 1,500 yards and 19 scores for Williams. But that
hand the man the Heisman.
What's that?
Just hand the man the Heisman.
Yeah, but he won't get it. Because the votes in the Southeast are going to be divided. The votes across the country are going to be divided. You're going to have two guys, and you might have two Heisman finalists from the same team. But when you have that, that means that neither of them is going to win it. We both think that the winner is going to be from the Pac-12. So, just different guys. I think it's going to be Mariota. You think it's going to be?
Huntley.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't like Mariota's chances of staying healthy.
Yeah, history is on your side there. But that doesn't mean that I don't think that Pender and Cook are going to get their chances, and I think Pender's going to have right around 140, 150 carries as well. I expect him to average around 7 yards a carry as well there. So I think you're now starting to see a lot of what I'm expecting is tied to how good I think this Florida State offensive line is.
Of course, and best offensive line in the country.
Yeah, and how much I think they're actually going to feature the run, especially late in games. They're going to run the ball a little bit more this year than they did last year overall. I think we're going to see, Pender with, let's say 150 carries. I think he's going to be right at around 1,000 yards. So I think it's very possible this year that you have Carlos Williams at 1,500, Mario Pender at 900 to 1,000 range. And then I think Dalvin Cook is going to get over 100 carries as well, and I think he's going to be around 700 yards. So, I think between those three guys, I think Florida State's going to break the season record for rushing total, which, they actually set, I believe, last year, which was at just over, 2,800 yards, I think. I think they'll go over 3,000 yards rushing as an offense this year. I think they'll be probably closer to 3,200 yards rushing as an offense this year, with those three guys getting the bulk of it. So, I'm obviously bullish on what to expect from the running game.
I mean, I completely agree. Other than, Carlos, you're about 200 yards higher there. On Mario and Cook, we're pretty much in agreement there.
Yeah, the one thing that may end up submarining this, I think, is it's very possible that Carlos gets gets significantly less than 200 carries, as Fisher maybe doesn't give him all that many carries in the second half of games. Would boost the other two guys a little bit, and maybe Carlos. I think Carlos's run, his average is going to be around 7.5. But his carry numbers may drop if Fisher decides to give the other guys reps in the second half more as they're running games out. So that's the other factor here. So let's go ahead then and project our F+ offensive rating. So for the this is a Football Outsiders metric of efficiency. Those of you who've followed at Noll Digest for a long time know that I'm an efficiency guy. I don't look at raw numbers all that much as very significant. When we're looking at team numbers, I want to look at efficiency, because all that really matters in football is how efficient you are. Do you score more times? Do you score more points per possession and per play than your opponent? If you do, then you're going to win every time. Points per game, total yardage, none of that stuff matters, because it's skewed by pace. It can be, you might average 40 points a game, but you might, have five more possessions per game than some other team because of your pace. That doesn't mean you're a better offense. They actually may be the more efficient offense because they're scoring more with fewer chances. So this is where the F+ rating from Football Outsiders comes in. Florida State was third offensively last year behind. It's a trivia question. I know you know these.
Yeah, it's Ohio State and Texas A&M.
Yeah, Texas A&M being first and Ohio State second. And, of course, their defenses were nowhere near very good last year. So, you know, Florida State was the one team, you know, that that actually was in the top five in both, top three in both, actually. Both offense and defense. But ultimately, where do you expect this Florida State offense to finish in terms of efficiency? Do they match last year's efficiency? Do they drop just a little bit? Or are they roughly, you know, maybe are they a little bit better?
All these numbers that we're throwing out is, you know, they're with an extra game. But I think Florida State finishes right around there. So right around, you know, the set. Like anywhere between second and fifth, that's where I think Florida State ends up. Just because, you know, with all these numbers, you know, that we're throwing out there, if we have, you know, 2,700 yards between the top three running backs, Winston has, you know, 4,200 yards passing, that's a lot of points that Florida State's going to be putting up. I mean, you're going to end drive with a lot of points, whether they be field goals, and you have the Lou Groza Award winner there, but you're gonna find, you know, there's Florida State's gonna end every almost every drive with points. There's a reason that, you know, Jimbo is not too worried about Case and Beatty.
It's also a reason why he's not all that worried about the punt returner situation right now, is because really all that matters is just catch it, we'll score.
Yeah, you know,
and that was where it got to last year. We don't care if you know, just catch the ball. We'll score from wherever we have to start, and we'll worry about that later.
Yep, I mean that's.
Although with Bobo Wilson, I think once he actually takes over the punt return duties, I think that's an additional threat that Florida State hasn't had the last couple of years at punt returner. So, you know, again, I do think you know it'll be about the same. I think. You know, asking for any more efficient is maybe a little bit much, but it's possible. I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this was the number one offense in F plus at the end of the year, after everything, you know, after all the chips fall. But I do think they'll be in the top four, say top 3 to 4, more or less in the same ballpark. All right, let's go ahead and then. Yeah, we could mention points per game. It's kind of dangerous this year. I guess that's one other thing we could project. I don't know that it matters that much because, you know, again, pacing is going to matter quite a bit. It's going to change quite a bit. But you know, what do you expect in terms of points per game? What can, you know, how much in the way of fireworks are we going to see?
I'm thinking about around 46 points a game.
Yeah, that's about where I'm at. Last year they averaged 51.6, and you know that was factoring in a couple more cupcake games than they had than they have on the schedule this year, and I think the overall slate is just a little tougher, and so even though I think they're going to be better in the second group, in the second units, so they may be able to, you know, score a couple extra garbage points and that sort of thing, a couple of extra garbage possessions in games that they might not have gotten last year. The other factor is I think they're going to run the ball a little bit more, which is going to lead to, you know, maybe one fewer possession per game, which, you know, that amounts to about that extra difference in scores. So that's basically where I put them. All right, let's move to defense. One interesting thing to start with here is to think about Mario Edwards' production. You know, a couple of people on our premium board have asked the question of, you know, if Mario Edwards ends the season with fewer than 10 sacks, you know, where would he go in the NFL draft? And I just don't know that it's very relevant because it's not what he's asked to do in this defense. But it is worth, you know, sort of thinking about, given what he's asked to do in this defense, what should we expect from a guy like Edwards, who really should be a top 10 pick next year? What number line would you expect from him on the year?
Well, last year he was third on the team in sacks with 3.5. I think he actually doubles that and ends up with around 7 or 8. I don't think he gets to 10. I think he could, but I don't think he does in the defense that Florida State's playing. But I think the more relevant area that we should be looking at is tackles for loss.
Yep, absolutely. And I agree with you, by the way. I've got him projected for about 7 sacks, 7.5 sacks as well. So we're dead on point there.
I think that last year he had 9.5.
tackles for loss. Yeah, and that was and that was second to Timmy Jernigan, who had 11.
Yep. And Mario only played, you know, 12 of the 14 games, so he could have, he probably would have been the leader in that category if he had played, you know, the other two games. But I think that he, I think he gets up around 15 or 16 this season.
Yeah, again, we're on the same point there. So I think about 15. I think about 15 tackles for loss and about 7 sacks is about right. And I actually think those numbers probably put him in the top 5 of the NFL draft, just because he's a guy that that is not scheme tied. You can play him at about 3 different positions at the NFL level. We're talking about a guy that's 295 pounds, and Florida State actually had him listed on the opening. On the opening depth chart as an outside linebacker, which you got to love Jimbo trolling the media and the fan base a little bit 2 years in a row with releasing that 5'2 Oki front as the base. But either way, I mean, the fact is he does play with his hand off the ground. He does play more or less an outside linebacker role in a number of the fronts that they play. And he can do that at 295. So
he's just a freak of an athlete, and I think that it puts him in the top 5 to top 10 range. I don't know if he can get up into the top 5 with the quarterbacks that are coming out, and then you know, you have some other really good defensive linemen like, you know, Dante Fowler Jr. and Leonard Williams.
Yeah, I still think Edwards ends up being favored over those guys because he's less scheme tied. But you know, I think either way he puts himself probably in the top 5 to 6 picks in the draft. But either way, so we're on the same page there. Let's think about then pass efficiency defense. Last year, Florida State was almost historically good in terms of pass efficiency defense. They only gave up. Let's see, looking at this.
156.6 yards a game.
Yeah, well, and again, I'm not looking at the per game number. What I'm looking at is the passer rating. And, you know, the best passer rating, you know, the best passer rating in 2012 was Florida State at 95.42. In 2011, it was Alabama with an absurd number, thanks in part because they didn't play anybody that could throw the ball in 2011. But 83.69 in 2011. 2010, TCU at 94.94, 2009, Nebraska in the high 80s. So Florida State last year at 93.77, a little bit of an improvement over 2012. Given the graduation of LaMarcus Joyner and Terrence Brooks, who I think was criminally underrated, do we expect Florida State to end up with a better overall passer rating, you know, against this defense? Do we expect them to put a rating, you know, down in the low 90s, even better than what they did in 2013? Or are we expecting, you know, maybe a little bit worse? I mean, where do you see this? I know my thought on this.
I think we get better. Yeah, I think that, you know, you bring back two of the top 5 corners in the country by every site out there. You know, I mean, all of them have PJ Williams and Ronald Darby in there,
and they're the second and third best corners on the roster.
And then you have Ramsey, who's just he plays every position, you know, out there. But the one reason that I think they get better and they're not going to feel the loss of Terrence Brooks and LaMarcus Joyner as much is the return of Tyler Hunter. I mean, I big fan of Tyler Hunter, have been since I saw him in high school. He is an incredible athlete that not many people remember because there's just so many great athletes in the secondary. But he's been in the program for a very long time. He understands the defense. When people don't understand, we were talking to PJ yesterday. When PJ doesn't understand something with the defense, they go to Tyler.
And that was true last year, actually, when Tyler was out. That was the fact last year.
Yeah, so everybody goes to Tyler. Everybody on the defense, you know, not just the secondary, they go to Tyler. The coaches use him as a coach on the field.
Yep.
So I think the return of Tyler Hunter is what makes this secondary better than it was last year.
I'm going to go with one other factor here that I think is underappreciated here, and that's how difficult it is to coach and also to learn the pattern reading style defense that Florida State plays in the secondary now. They shifted to that kind of defense. I mean, under Mark Stoops, they didn't really pattern read all that much. They basically zone dropped most of the time. You know, they played some man, but they didn't play the matchup concepts that they played under Pruitt and that they're going to play under Kelly. One of the reasons that Fisher hired the staff that he did in 2013, after Stoops had departed in 2012, is that he really wanted to go to this style of pattern matching, aggressive coverage defense. That basically what you do is you're reading the stem, you're reading the release of the various receivers as they come off the line of scrimmage, and depending on where different players release, you either pass them off to other players. I mean, it's a zone in that sense. Or you stick with them, but as soon as you know who your particular responsibility is, you're on him sort of in a man role. So it's sort of like a matchup zone in defense. And you know, again, those who've been with us for a long time have heard me talk about this before. But you know, there are all sorts of rules that you have to really know and internalize to do that well, and to get your hands on the football and all that. Requires that you know where teams are going. One of the things that style of defense does is you try to learn what their favorite match, what their favorite route patterns are, what their favorite route combinations are. And as soon as you see the stems that look like a particular route combination, you're trying to jump the combination. You're taking educated guesses, you know, carefully, but you're taking educated guesses to make sure that you're closing down space and taking away the things that they run all the time. Well, that's really difficult to do well, and it's hard to learn. And Florida State did it extremely well in year one of playing that kind of defense. But the real returns for that should be in year two. And that's where you should see the secondary being that much more aggressive. These are guys that have now played in this kind of pattern match scheme for 2 years, and they've now internalized those rules. They now are running the full defense in the secondary, whereas last year they really couldn't do that. There was a lot they had to simplify, especially as the year went on a little bit, to make sure that guys really understood the rules as they were being taught. Now they can really get that much more aggressive. So I actually think, you know, last year they had 26 interceptions. They had 26 interceptions in those 14 games, which is outstanding. I mean, that's you don't expect that ever, except I do expect that again this year. that's where things are, I think, with this secondary. That was nation leading, by the way. The next best was 25 with Houston, and then the number three was 21. So that tells you how far and away better than everybody else that was, that number. You know, I think they're going to actually be a little bit, I think they're going to be more efficient, and I think they're going to have, you know, in the same range, mid-20s to 30 interceptions because of getting their hands on so many footballs, because of how they're going to be that much better at the pattern reading side. So I actually think the
quarterbacks that they go up against this year are terrible.
Well, yeah, that's also going to be a factor. Although I think, you know, again, some of the quarterbacks have improved over last year's slate. I mean, they're going to play Brissett at North Carolina State instead of the putrid filth that they were fielding at quarterback last year. They're going to play Everett Golson at Notre Dame, who, you know, should be a good matchup there. And actually, Notre Dame's receivers are huge and big mismatches for most teams, including Robinson, who's 6'7". So you know that's going to be an interesting challenge. There's a little bit more actually in a few of those games, more of a challenge than they faced last year. But you're right, by and large, the quarterbacks that they're playing on the year are underwhelming. So I mean, that's only going to feed that stat line. But I actually think the pass defense overall is going to improve numbers wise and in terms of overall efficiency. So then we can go to yards per carry given up in the running game. I expect that to actually go down just slightly. Again, partially because they're going to be more comfortable overall as a defense, and partially because I think the slate that they're playing just suits that well. They're playing a lot of spread teams, and I think, you know, ultimately they'll be able to choke that out. So I think they'll be around the same in terms of rushing yards per game, yards per carry, that is. And then the next question is points per game. Where do you expect this defense to turn out?
I think around, like, I think it's going to be just about the same as last year. There's really
despite a tougher schedule.
Despite the tougher schedule, you know, there's really no offense on the schedule that, you know, scares me as far as putting up points on the Florida State defense. I know you like the Notre Dame defense or the Notre Dame offense with their big wide receivers, Neville Golson. If I had to pick the best offense on the schedule, I would say it would be Miami's. Even with a freshman quarterback.
Well, I mean, by then he's barely going to be a freshman. So I mean, you've got a strong case there because Duke Johnson, Stacy Coley, they've got weapons.
Absolutely, they're going to depend on their offensive line. But getting back to it, there's just not an offense that scares me out there that, you know, is going to put up more than, you know, 25 points on the Florida State defense. I just don't see it. So I think it's going to be around at an average of, you know, somewhere in between 12 and 14.
Yeah, that's they gave up 12.1 last year. I think right around 12 is going to be the same this year, despite the tougher slate. I think, you know, teams like Syracuse and I think Louisville is going to have some trouble scoring on Florida State. I think, you know, by and large, teams are going to have some difficulty scoring on Florida State over the course of the year. I do think, you know, Notre Dame is a threat to, you know, score in the maybe high 20s. You know, I think that's about as much as they give up. And I think you're going to have to score over 30 to beat this team. So that tells you where ultimately I think we're going to wind up. So that puts, by the way, for us, both of us have our margin of victory right around the 36-point margin, it appears, or 35-point margin per game. At 45 to 12, roughly 46 to 12 area. So, yep. So we can cover that one. That, you know, I think makes it clear in terms of, both of us, what our expectations for this season are. You know, obviously, teams that have started the season ranked number one have not fared all that well in recent years or really in any years. You know, it's five teams in how many years? Five teams since the late 70s, I think, that have been ranked first have actually gone on to win the national championship. I don't remember the exact number, but or exact year when that started. But two of those were Florida State teams. But
it's been, I believe, three since 1985, okay. Including two from Florida State.
Yeah, so that should tell you something in terms of how, you know, Florida State's slate on a given, you know, when they've got a good enough team, generally their schedule is suited well to putting them in that environment with both the 93 and 99 teams starting and finishing number one. The real question is, you know, why is that? Why is it that the media so often get it wrong? Why is it that everybody so often gets it wrong? I think one factor is you know, the variability of the game and, you know, the possibility of injuries and things like that. But I think more often than not, the reason that's the case, you know, last year, for example, you know, the reason that the team that was ranked number one was ranked number one because they'd won it the year before. And the year before that, it was, if you remember, you know, it was Alabama last year. The year before that, it was Alabama USC, who was ranked number one. Why? Well, because they returned some really, you know, really appealing skill talent with, you know, their pair of receivers and with Matt Barkley. But nobody paid attention to the fact that they were razor thin on the lines. So I think what happens is the hype machine gets going about, you know, skill talent and returning skill talent and especially returning quarterbacks, and that's why people sort of end up missing more often than not. The place where I think we would agree that Florida State is unique here is they're returning so much on the lines, and it's the secondary and other factors that you look at it and you say they're returning more than the normal team that did well the year before. Because last year was not supposed to be the year that Florida State won it all. They won it a year early. So now they should be preseason number one because they really do have the most talent left. And normally that I don't think is the case in terms of preseason number ones. Oftentimes they're teams that lost more than meets the eye. and they're being ranked based on, you know, good performance in, you know, the last game of the prior year, or you know, returning skill talent or whatever. I think this team is, you know, we were talking off air. We agree this team is more like a team like the, let's say, 95 Nebraska that returned the bulk of their roster from
the best team of all time
from the prior year, or say 2005 USC, who buzzed through the schedule until they played another very good team in Texas, in the Vince Young Texas team, where, you know, I think this is that kind of preseason number one that blazes through the schedule, because they really are a team that returned everybody not everybody, but you know, the people of consequence, enough people of consequence that they should be there. So I think we've stated already our expectations for the season. I think both of us expect, you know, it's we would both be surprised to see this team lose in the regular season. I'm a little wary about maybe a matchup with Alabama in the playoff. I would be a little nervous about that on the interior line. But, you know, just going through the regular season, I think both of us are on the same page there in terms of that expectation.
I honestly don't think that, like, you know, the selection committee, being behind closed doors, unless it's Auburn and Alabama, as Auburn and Alabama both get in, or say there's two SEC teams that have already played, I don't see the selection committee putting Alabama and Florida State in the same semifinal game, just because of how much draw it would be for the national championship game, because that's what everybody wants to see.
Yeah, but I think that the X factor here is that I expect the SEC champion to have at least two losses this year, whether that's Alabama or anybody else. I think the SEC champion will come out with two losses this year, which would potentially obligate the committee to put them as the number four seed, which would, you know, if you're Florida State, you do not want to see, in my view, you don't want to see Alabama as the number four seed this year. If you're coming in as the number one seed and, you know, you draw Alabama as the number four seed, that's not ideal in my view because of the way that matchup might work. But we'll see.
It depends on how their secondary responds from last year, because they were bad. But
yeah,
that brings me back to your earlier point of people, you know, the media taking, you know, the prior year and looking at it. There's absolutely no reason that Oklahoma should be ranked in the top five.
None.
Trevor Knight had one game over 200 yards passing, and that was the bowl game. He was replaced by a guy who's playing tight end right now. He lost his job to a guy who's playing tight end.
I don't even think they're going to win their conference. But that,
I don't either. We both picked Texas.
Yeah, I've got Texas. So, you know, I don't see them there. I think if there's a conference that ends up with two teams in the playoff this year, it's the Pac-12.
I can agree with that.
So, you know, we'll see what happens there, because I think the Pac-12 is going to be a little stronger at the top this year. I think there's going to be a real war between three teams, really, between Oregon, UCLA, and then USC, actually. I think USC has a chance to contend for that conference with Sarkisian. I think, those, you know, it's possible that two of those three might wind up in the playoff, which, of course, Florida State, I think, would be very happy matching up with any of those teams. You know, obviously, Oregon is a different kind of team. It's a pain to defend them. But if you're Florida State, you relish playing against a spread team by and large, as long as it's not coached by Gus Malzahn and as long as they don't have your signals on the sideline as well.
I was just going to say that I would replace USC with Stanford in that area, because until Oregon proves to me that they can take a punch to the mouth from Stanford and win, it's the same thing I'm going to say with Clemson. I won't predict Clemson to beat South Carolina until they beat South Carolina, until Dabo proves to me that he can take down Spurrier, because right now Spurrier's his daddy.
Well, the reason for that, though, I look at each of those and I look at the reasons that those have been bad matchups, and it's because those teams have been better up front. And I'm not sure that's true this year with Stanford and with South Carolina. I think both of those series may turn this year a little bit, because I think Clemson's better up front than they have been. I think South Carolina's a little worse up front than they have been. I think Stanford's taken a little bit of a step back there, and I think Oregon's a little bit better up front. So, you know, it'll be an interesting thing. I actually think Stanford probably winds up with about four losses this year, given their schedule. You know, I think it's going to be potentially a step back year. That doesn't mean that their program's taking a step back. I think their program is healthy, but you know, I think that that given their schedule this year, you know, a three loss year would probably be a successful year for them, in my view. Anyway, let's go ahead and wrap this up with some discussion of our breakout player on each side of the ball, and then we'll wrap it up with a player with something to prove. Actually, let's start with the negative. So, what player on each side of the ball, in your view, really has something to prove coming into the year?
Well, on offense, I'm gonna
rule out Cason Beatty as an option here.
I wasn't going there. You know,
I was.
The smart answer would be Christian Green, but I'm gonna go with Austin Barron. He has to prove to me that he can step into that role. You know, they've got Cam Irvin working as a center. He does it every practice. He's getting better at it, but Cam didn't come back, you know, for his senior year to play center. But if Barron just is not getting the job done, then he's going to need to be replaced. So I feel like in his senior season, he has to prove to me that he can get the job done. Now, you know, against a guy like Grady Jarrett of Clemson, I can understand needing help. Because every center in the country is going to need help against that guy. He's one of the best defensive tackles in the country.
Yeah, except for Brian Stork really didn't last year, which is one of the reasons they had such a good time with Clemson last year.
Exactly. Stork's, you know, there's a reason he was voted the best center in college football.
Yep.
But I think Barron needs to step up and show everyone that he's better than people think.
Yeah, I think that's a really good pick. What about the? So I'm on the offensive side. I'll take the other guy that you mentioned. I'll go with Christian Green. He's a guy that has a lot to prove, tremendous talent. So you know, it's a little bit of a different situation with Austin Barron. We're not looking at a guy who has all the talent in the world, and the question is whether the light bulb has really gone on or not. We're looking at a lunch pail type who's really going to have to, you know, maximize what he's able to do physically. To show that he can be that anchor in the center that they need, but Christian Green is on the opposite side, where you talk about a guy who, again, I go back to 2010 when I was talking to Dossie to Lawrence Dossie when Christian Green was redshirting. And he was raving about the kind of talent that the guy had. I mean, he was saying, you know, the guy's 6'2", 200 pounds, and he's faster than Burt Reed. And you know, he was really excited about the potential there, and we saw that a little bit as a freshman from Christian Green, and then all of a sudden he got dinged up a little bit, got passed over by, you know, Kelvin Benjamin and a couple other guys, and lost his confidence and lost any productivity and just disappeared for 2 years. And now all of a sudden he's held off so far those freshmen, and as we talked about last podcast, in our last discussion, Fisher's going to favor the younger guy if all things are equal. So when it comes down to it, he's been better than those young guys so far. So, you know, he's got a lot to prove. He's got a ton of talent and the capacity, you know, a high ceiling to actually be a real difference maker. But, you know, you got to wait and see. You know, it's not one of those things that really a whole lot of people expect. And it would certainly be a very good sign for Florida State coming into the year if they could get him anywhere near his potential. How about the defensive side? What do you expect on defense?
Well, it has to be Chris Kasher. All the talent in the world, just light bulb hasn't come on. It's got to come on.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go with Kasher as well. That was my guy as well. there really isn't anybody else for me on that defense that I'm saying prove it to. But that's a guy who he came in as a five-star recruit. And to me, you know, again, when you're a five-star recruit and you get some bit time, you get some backup time and all that, I expect to see you flash. And, yeah, you know, I saw Marcus Oligwe flash repeatedly. I didn't really see that from Kasher. Not when he's played as a backup, not in spring games, not in opportunities that I've, you know, in other opportunities to see them play really. So he's the guy. He, as far as I'm concerned, that's a show me player on the defensive side.
I would also, sorry, not to cut you off, but I would also add Niall Lawrence Stample to that list. I feel like he played well, but we're talking Florida State here. You know, you have to play better than just well at the defensive tackle position.
Yeah, he was a weak link at times last year, even though he's a good player. Yeah. Like you said, he played well in general. He was a little overweight, and he got pushed around a little bit at times against some of the better lines, and was a bit of a weak link when Jernigan had to go out. So yeah, I think that's another good name to bring in there. But I think, you know, the real intriguing thing there for me is whether or not a guy like Nadi by the end of the year ends up taking a lot of those snaps and ends up being the guy that's the dominator at that position against the better lines when the chips are down, and that may well happen. And then, you know, there are some interesting reports that are coming out about Justin Shanks in practices. Again, it's hard to know what to believe at different times because, you know, this is a camp run by Jimbo, and you never know what leaks or what. So, you know, it's like, you know, getting something in the Cold War era. You have to, you know, evaluate the sources and do the best you can to evaluate whether or not this is something they want you to have. So, you know, I don't know, but that whole that whole nose tackle position, not just Niall Lawrence Stample, is a wait and see position. It's a something to prove position for me this year. So let's then move over. We'll conclude with our breakout player on each side of the ball. So starting on offense, who's your breakout player?
Oh, there's only one. It's Mario Pender. I don't know if you can hear it, but there's a smile on my face when I say that name because I am so excited to watch him play football. I mean, it's been 2 years. In high school, he may have been the most dominant running back I've ever seen in my life. I mean, he was just absolutely dominant.
He runs so angry too, and that's one of the things that's beautiful to watch when you have a running back with that level of quickness and size matched together that runs so aggressively and angrily through the line. So yeah, that's a good pick. That's taking another one that I probably would have taken in terms of a breakout player. You know, I think the other guy that I'll leave him to you. I'll actually say, as far as breakout player on the offense, I'm going to go with Bobo Wilson. I know I don't expect him to play the first couple games, but I think this is a guy that is going to open some eyes as the year goes on with his quickness and how natural he is as a wide receiver and how easily he's able to get over top of people and get wide open and make plays downfield. I think Bobo Wilson would be the other guy. I could also choose Dalvin Cook, the third back. But other than Pender and maybe Cook, I think the guy I'm expecting a lot of in terms of breakout player would be Bobo Wilson. So on the defensive side, who you got?
DeMarcus Walker.
All right.
I'm gonna take Walker here.
You're gonna take the guy who's currently taking snaps from Chris Kasher.
Absolutely. I mean, if Kasher ain't getting it done, somebody has to. And right now, that's DeMarcus Walker. You know, he plays as a down lineman. He also plays standing up right now. Him and, for the past week, Walker was taking number one reps at the Sam linebacker position. Kasher, was sitting on the sideline watching, and that wasn't because of injury. That was because two reasons. One, Walker had a phenomenal camp. Jimbo will tell you that himself. And two, Kasher is in the doghouse. Kasher's always in the doghouse. And Kasher's going to stay in the doghouse as long as South Sarah.
So you're banking on Walker now.
I am banking on Walker.
Okay, so
I would love to be proved wrong with regards to Kasher, but I think that Walker comes in and plays that position.
So I'm gonna go with two players. I'm gonna cheat my own rules here. I'm gonna go with two players here, and I'm gonna go with Derek Nnadi at the nose tackle position. I think he's going to be a freshman All-American there, or at least mentioned on some of those lists. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be a game changer on the inside. And then I'm actually going to go with Derek Mitchell, who, I liked his film. I liked his tape coming out of high school. He's a guy who's, you know, he's big. He's got a lot of length. He carries his weight well. I mean, he's 300 pounds, but you wouldn't know it to look at him in terms of, you know, he just doesn't have a lot of bad weight. But he's a guy that's not been able to stay healthy at all. And if the light bulb is truly on, as Fisher and you know is trying to suggest in some of these interviews of late, if the light bulb is truly on, he does have the talent to really be an interesting prospect, a guy that could be an NFL guy, given his body. He's got an NFL kind of body.
It's just
a matter of whether or not he's putting it together and whether he can stay healthy. I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, if you look at that guy and you say, wow, that guy, I mean, what would you say his legitimate height is? I would give him at least 6'4".
I would say 6'4", 6'5", which is really big for a defensive tackle.
Yeah, but, it's huge. And the thing is, he's svelte enough. He's fluid enough to play end. You know, he's not Mario Edwards. But you know he is physically not all that far removed in terms of, you know, what he brings to the table from somebody like Goldman. Now Goldman's a more physical player overall. He's a bigger load at the point of attack, a more natural two gap guy. But in terms of the height, weight, length, athleticism thing that Mitchell can bring to the table, he's not that far off there from a guy like Goldman. So I'm gonna take him as a potential breakout as well. So I'm gonna go with two defensive tackles. Which if those of you who are listening and have paid any attention to me all year, you know that if I'm taking defensive tackles, that's a really good sign, because that's the one position that I've been really concerned about coming in into this season. And I felt like if Florida State could get good production from the defensive tackle position, then we're looking at an all-time level team that, you know, people would potentially be mentioning on the same level as, say, a 95 Nebraska or 2001 Miami after this season, if they're able to get the guys, the pieces to fit and to play and dominate on the defensive interior. And if Nnadi and Mitchell wind up being breakout players like I'm expecting at this point, then I think that's the step that Florida State may indeed take. So I think that's a good place to wrap. How about you?
I just have one other thing to say. Let's just be very thankful that none of our players are Josh Shaw right now.
Oh, okay, yes.
You know, just, you know, even if they, you know, even the walk-ons, if they don't, you know, they make a bad play, let's just be thankful that none of our players are Josh Shaw, who, by the way, is a former Florida Gator.
And on that note, this is Jason Staples. On behalf of the whole Noll Digest crew and Wayne McGahee, thanks for listening to the Unconquered podcast. We'll be with you after the game in Arlington. And thanks for listening. And also, if you're enjoying our podcast, please go to iTunes and rate us. Give us a good rating. It's a way to help us get more listeners, and it's always fun to have more people joining us. But again, this is Jason Staples for Wayne McGahee signing off. Thanks for listening. I made this.